From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The bishops of the United States met this week in Baltimore and elected a new president for their Episcopal Conference. It was a historic moment for U.S. Catholics when Archbishop Jose Gomez was chosen as the first Latino head of the body of U.S. bishops. This week on Register Radio, we catch up on what the bishops discussed, and we talk to the USCCB head of integral development, Jonathan Reyes, for an insider's take. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, I am so glad to have you back stateside.
Yes, I'm happy to be here, too, although Italy is a beautiful place.
It is indeed. There was a lot going on in Italy, and there's been a lot going on in Baltimore this week. You attended the U.S. Bishops' Gathering, and of course, this is their annual fall meeting. This is always a meeting for them that has a very, very busy agenda. And last year, that agenda included responding to all of the scandal that had emerged in the months before. It was a kind of contentious meeting. This meeting was a bit more ordinary, if you will. They had a rather typical agenda, and part of that agenda was to vote on a new president for the conference. And
that's
of course,
right.
that vote was Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles. And from what I heard and saw, it was a huge majority who voted for Archbishop Gomez. But that wasn't a surprise, was it, Matthew?
No. In fact, coming in, I think the absolute assumption was that Archbishop Gomez would win. And in fact, he did very handily by one of the largest majorities, I think, in certainly living memory of the conference. Mm. It made perfect sense. He had been a vice president for the last 3 years. He was a known quantity. Some secular media portrayed this as a deliberate rebuke on the part of the bishops to the Trump administration, which is, in my view, not only incorrect, but I think it's a complete misinterpretation of why they elected Archbishop Gomez, who, as head of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, is head as shepherd of one of the, well, the largest archdiocese mm-hmm. in the United States, not to mention one of the most diverse and one of the most challenging from all of the different dimensions that the bishops are facing in their own diocese, including the problems of culture, secularization, of polarization, of political problems, economic problems. They're all there in Los Angeles. So right. I think Archbishop Gomez is really the perfect choice for the country right now at this moment.
And of course, that secular spin was really because of his stance on immigration. He is an immigrant. He was born in Mexico. He's lived most of his life in the U.S., but he's been a strong advocate for immigrants. And in fact, News Nightly was able to interview Archbishop Gomez this week, and they had a very, you know, a very good interview with him where he articulates the reasons why we as a church and as a country need to embrace immigrants. He believes that in a way they're the future of our country. But
But he also is a brilliant spokesperson for Catholic social teaching on the issue, especially helping people understand the prudential judgments that are involved in crafting immigration policy.
Absolutely.
But he always makes the point that he is an advocate for immigration reform that he talks about that is possible, but also obtainable.
Right.
And he also stresses, as Catholic social teaching does, that yes, we have the vital part of respecting the dignity of the immigrant, of the refugee, but at the same time, we also respect the rights of a sovereign state to have borders and to have laws that are followed. So it's that beautiful balance of Catholic teaching that I think Archbishop Gomez is able to use that word that you did, articulate so well.
Right, right. I've known Archbishop Gomez for quite some time. He was leaving the Archdiocese of Denver. He was auxiliary bishop there in 2000, I think he was named in 2001.
Yeah.
But he was leaving right as I was getting to Denver for my job as communications director there to go to San Antonio, where he became bishop of San Antonio before L.A., and he left an incredible legacy of actually fighting for immigration reform. And I say fighting for it because nobody's ever wanted to do this on both sides of the aisle. I mean, it's been that long. that he has actually been articulating what needs to happen, both to respect the laws and make laws that that will be followed, but also take into account the changing landscape of the country. So yes, there is a lot we can hear from Archbishop Gomez about on that, but on many other issues. And so we look forward to seeing how he leads the conference. You know, the secular spin on the election of Gomez wasn't the only spin I think we saw going on. There was a lot of spin around Archbishop Christoph Pierre's address to the bishops. He's the papal nuncio. Every year he addresses the bishops on the first day of their gathering. What did he have to say, and how was it spun?
Well, as any nuncio will, he exhorted the bishops to reflect, to be better shepherds, and this is the type of a speech that you're often going to hear from a nuncio. Mm-hmm. He specifically, though, and this is the part that sort of briefly set the Twitterverse, the social media world on fire, he asked them to reflect on whether or not they are helping Catholics to receive the teachings of Pope Francis. And then he went on to look at some of the key documents of Pope Francis's pontificate, including Evangelii Gaudium on evangelization, Amoris Laetitia on the life of the family, and Laudato Si on integral ecology. And that was then interpreted by some in the social media and the secular media as a rebuke of the U.S. bishops, as though they're standing in opposition to the reforms that Pope Francis wants. And anyone who spends much time listening to the bishop speaking at their conference knows rather quickly that the U.S. bishops are constantly quoting Pope Francis. And in their own documents at home, they're constantly quoting Pope Francis. I interpreted it a little differently. I think that Archbishop Pierre was exhorting the bishops to continue the process of helping people, as we do in any pontificate, to help Catholics understand what the Pope is thinking and what he's saying and what he's teaching. And then there was that brief flurry as well over the use of the term the magisterium of Pope Francis. But that's another phrase, too, that is often used for other pontificates. I can remember Pope Benedict XVI referring specifically, for example, to the magisterium of Pope Pius XII. We hear references to the magisterium of Pope John Paul II. So it's just sort of where we are in terms of social media.
So, you know, for those of us who weren't there, we were following it. We could follow the live stream, and then we follow it on Twitter and social media. So we get a sense of things, of there being bishops at odds with one another over things like Pope Francis's quote-unquote magisterium, you know, which includes things like ecology, and then on abortion, that, you know, the U.S. Church is overly concerned with abortion or things like that. In your interactions with the bishops there, and we're almost out of time, but for this segment, but in your interactions, what was the spirit? What did you feel? Was the tension thick that you could cut it, or what was it?
No, in a way, it was interesting. This meeting contrasted to the last several that were held under the shadow of the McCarrick scandal and the Pennsylvania grand jury report. There was an odd sense of normalcy to this gathering. And that's why I think the back and forth between Bishop McElroy and the committee that was drafting this document on faithful citizenship, and this whole back and forth as well on what is a preeminent position of abortion, it took quite a few bishops by surprise. They really had not anticipated that, in part because the tone and the atmosphere were really quite calm and, as the Romans like to say, serene heading into the meeting. And there was good humor throughout. I think Cardinal DiNardo, the outgoing president, was enjoying his last days, and he had the best lines of the whole week, I would say. Very briefly, he talked about the fact that the bishops did a voice vote unanimously approving the call to Pope Francis to name St. Irenaeus of Lyon a doctor of the Church. And his only comment was that I'm glad it was unanimous, because if anyone had abstained or objected, we would have to put you on trial for heresy.
That's awesome. And of course, that made you happy as a church historian to,
yes,
to see St. Irenaeus get that very large vote of confidence.
I've joked it's why I went this week.
Absolutely. Stay tuned to hear Jonathan Reyes give an insider's take on the U.S. bishops' meeting. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
The There's nothing like EWTN's National Catholic Register, revealing, engaging, inspiring. The most comprehensive news of the day from a Catholic perspective, with the moral authority that comes from being faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And in the words of our founder, Monsignor Matthew Smith, a paper that will always be loyal to the Church and has no selfish axe to grind, because the truth when the Register was founded in 1927 is still the truth today. The award-winning National Catholic Register helps readers engage the culture with confidence in the saving and sanctifying gospel of Jesus Christ. Get 6 free issues today by ordering online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. That's 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Mother Cabrini is a woman of fine understanding and great holiness. She is a saint. Those words were spoken by Pope Leo XIII, a pontiff who knew her well. I'm Father Charles Connor, and this is The Church in Time. Frances Xavier Cabrini was born in Italy, and she began the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart. She brought her community to New York in 1889, a city where she found 50,000 Italian immigrants. Over the next 35 years, Mother Cabrini would cross the ocean 30 times, establishing houses of her order in France, in England, and in South America. She opened schools, she opened hospitals, she opened orphanages. She was very concerned with the plight of Italian immigrants wherever she found them in the world. And she always encouraged her sisters to give of themselves readily and completely. Mother Cabrini would die in Columbus Hospital in Chicago, but her remains are venerated to this day in the chapel of Cabrini High School in New York City. And this has been The Church in Time.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, who attended the U.S. Bishops' meeting in Baltimore this week, where he spoke to Jonathan Reyes, Head of Integral Development at the Bishops' Conference.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much, as always, for the gift of your time and your service to the USCCB.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So coming into this meeting, the bishops always have a list of priorities and concerns and things that they want to accomplish. What is your sense of what they wanted to get done, and did they manage it at this meeting?
Well, you know, in general, what they were doing was sort of returning to some of the basic business of the conference. So elections and things that had been put on hold a bit because of, you know, the last 12 months or so. So they took care of any number of things, from elections to approving documents, but also to, I would say, lifting up the pastoral dimension of the Church again in a very real way. So we saw a lot of reports on that as well, and I thought that was very encouraging.
The highlight, well, I suppose there are two for this meeting. The one is the elections that took place, in particular of the new president, and that's Archbishop Jose Gomez of Los Angeles. But then we had something of a dust-up during the meeting on the issue of abortion, but on the wider issue, I think, of interpreting Pope Francis, and then also how the bishops are going to confront the election. Let's start with that discussion relating to faithful citizenship and what happened on the floor.
So, you know, what we saw with faithful citizenship was a discussion over a point of how to articulate the preeminence of the issue of abortion in the political arena in the United States. And I think the bishops had a back and forth on that, and they landed with it being preeminent. And just as someone who's been in this space, I would simply add this, that, you know, having been involved in the policy and government relations, we can actually do more than one thing. I know that seems a little simplistic, but we're on all these issues, and we go at them with every bit of fervor and ability we have, and to move any of these issues, because we're caring for people across the spectrum. And I don't mean that as to somehow take away the question of preeminence, but simply to say the conference has been and continues to be committed across the board to every issue of human life and dignity, and we'll continue to do that.
Well, and there's also the point that always has to be made of the difference between intrinsic evil and what are prudential judgments. and how we go about achieving policies for immigration and even climate change and other things that fall within the heading of prudential judgments, right?
Absolutely. And these are questions that have been around the conference for a very long time and we keep advancing on. So the other thing to say, though, is, you know, the bishops have had policy in these areas for a very long time. And so a lot of what we're doing, and faithful citizenship was redone in 2015, so it's the same document coming out. So part of what we were just trying to do is say there's a lot of thinking around this the bishops have been doing. They have a long tradition of being in these spaces, and the new letter and the new video that were approved were simply to point people back to it. Here's, just go there. Please go look at this, and you'll see exactly, there's no mystery here. Exactly where the bishops stand is really well articulated.
So the bishops themselves have been remarkably consistent over the years on the area of abortion, on including what the church teaches in the areas of Catholic social thought on immigration. Immigration is also a topic that did emerge here as a major point of discussion. We had the back and forth about DACA on the very day that the Supreme Court was hearing oral arguments. For those who may not be familiar with it, what exactly is the USCCB's position on immigration?
The fundamental starting point for the USCCB's position is the taking care of human beings. And so where there's a need, that's where the bishops are going to be. And they're going to articulate policies that they discern are the best for caring for people in need. And a lot of people in need right now are people who are fleeing other countries or coming to try and get a better life, etc. So that's how I think if you read everything through that lens, and then you start applying prudential discernment on top of that, that will more than anything explain where the bishops stand. And so for DACA, they strongly support keeping DACA and caring for these people who've come here, and their life circumstances are amazing. And a lot of the bishops on the border, they're dealing with this daily, and Archbishop Gomez has been a leader on this. So now that he's in the presidency, I think we're going to continue to see a lot of interest around that. But for people who are coming new to these policy questions, start with that. Start with, okay, how do we take care of people in need? Because if they're in need, the church wants to be there.
It was pointed out in the middle of the discussion relating to the preeminence of abortion, as well as in the discussion on immigration, where Pope Francis has been very strong in his opposition to abortion. I think the phrase has been used that he equated it at times to genocide. He's talked about that those who procure an abortion are, it's equivalent to hiring a hitman. On immigration, he has also really been very clear in presenting the church's position, as you note, on the dignity of the human person, but also respecting borders and the rule of law. Is it correct to say that this is also a position that the U.S. bishops articulate?
I think so. Yeah, I think we've been right in line with the Holy Father on these things. And the only space where you maybe catch a slightly different tone of that is the context of the United States. It's just, it's not the same conversation in every country. And I think that accounts for any perceived gap there, but I just don't see it.
On the issue of immigration, and this may be an unfair sort of trying to specify, we have a new president for the USCCB, and that is Archbishop Jose Gomez. And he has been, over the years, one of the most articulate spokespeople in the church on the issue of immigration. And here he is coming in now as president, and I want to come back more to him in a second. How important is it for him as the new president, heading into an election year, to be that voice now, that face for the bishops on the issue of immigration?
I think he'll just continue to be himself, right? He's written books on this, and if listeners haven't read them, it's really worth looking at their short sort of essay type in a book that's very helpful. I think he just continues to be in the space he's been in, because that's where all his brother bishops are. That's where Cardinal DiNardo has been. So he's just now articulating what we've been articulating constantly. And I think it's a great visual sign that he's the president of the conference. And he'd have been the president of the conference with or without this issue because of who he is and the respect he has among his peers. So straightforward, I think it's just going to be continue on.
Well, and that's a really important point to make, isn't it? That he is such a known quantity to his brother bishops. He's been vice president of the conference for the last 3 years. He's also somebody, though, who understands the workings of the United States and the workings of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. What are some of the specific skills that you see him bringing over the next 3 years in a very polarized environment now that are going to be especially helpful for U.S. Catholics?
Well, the first thing I'd articulate isn't a skill as so much a sort of, I've known him for a number of years, for a long time, and a consistent theme of his life, let alone his life as a bishop, and this goes back to Denver days, etc., is just the call to holiness. It's in him. It's in his own spiritual formation. And I think he has a fundamental understanding that at the heart of everything we're doing as a church is the call to holiness. And if we can start there and build off that with Christ, etc., but I think that's a real gift. Because the way in which policy conversations have sort of are tempted to take over, or lean towards taking over the whole conversation in the church and taking all the air out of the room, to have a bishop who is so personally and articulately, they all are, I mean, this isn't, but this is this particular sort of charism he has, and I think that's going to be a real gift. And then his on the more practical side, he is multilingual, he has an international sense, he understands things in Rome, he understands things in the United States. He's the sort of quintessential bridge between a whole set of cultural and political realities. So at this moment in the church, just having a voice who can see the world from all these different perspectives, and one of the most multicultural dioceses in the world, probably, right? I think more than ever, that kind of global bridge-building view centered on the call to holiness is a real gift.
Do you see him especially as a kind of bridge to Latin America? He is the first Latino to be president of the conference. He is himself an immigrant. He was ordained, I think, in Spain. From the not just the language side, but also the cultural side, what can he do to help the Latino Catholic community in the United States?
There's probably few people who are as qualified as he is to actually address those questions. He also knows a lot of churchmen, a lot of bishops, and a lot of people in Latin America and in Central America. So he has personal connections. And he understands the differences. A lot of people don't between Latin American countries and dynamics in Latin America. So there's probably no one better situated than he is to help with what are genuinely complex questions. I mean, sometimes these get reduced to too simplistic of questions, right? There's Latinos and then there's not Latinos, but that's not at all the dynamic. And his ability to have relationships with these different communities, understand the way devotional life works, the understand the way people think about global things, and his relationships with these bishops just allow him to, the word he likes to use is integration, and I think he knows what that means with a kind of granular detail that a lot of people don't.
And at a time, especially when Latino Catholics in the United States are becoming a larger group within the wider tapestry of American Catholicism, how significant a moment is this for them, but also forecasting ahead to the important role that Latino Catholics are going to have to play in the life of Catholicism in the United States, especially in the face of mounting secularism, of the rise of the NONESs, the nuns, the encroachment of Pentecostals, and other factors that are influencing not just Latino Catholics, but American culture at large?
Well, I mean, I think you've made the case for it, right? And you've said how important this is, and it's inevitable. All right, these are questions we'll have to face. Maybe I'll answer this in a slightly different way, which is simply, I happened to be visiting with the Archbishop just yesterday, and we were recalling something he did in Denver. He created something called Centro San Juan Diego, the San Juan Diego Center. And it was a remarkable, and still is, as far as I know, apostolic and social service center, communal center. And I think things like Centro throughout the world are a way forward. And this is what he's so good at, right? He actually gets the granular detail of how these questions you've raised, which are very important in terms of staying with the faith, dealing with secularism, transition to integration in the United States, to generational issues in different countries. He's actually created a really amazing model. And I think he can be of service to a lot of us, not just as brother bishops, but to the whole church in pushing that model out, explaining the principles that guided it. It'll look different in different places. This is the Pope Francis thing, right? Let me just put it this way. He has accompanied people making these kinds of transitions and integration that, in a way that gives him clear knowledge, the kind of relationships, and the granular understanding of the dynamic.
Yeah, last question, and this is something that Cardinal DiNardo has referenced and something that I know is very important to Archbishop Gomez, and that is trying to recapture a sense of civil discourse in what is a pretty uncivil era, at least when it comes to political life and at times even within the church.
Sure, this is the great question. It's not clear exactly how you do that. If there was an easy solution, someone would have found it. The USCCB is launching a campaign called Civilize It, so that's our contribution that we can do as a sort of institution. Archbishop Gomez is known for his ability to speak to many different people in different ways, so he models the very kind of rhetoric that I think we need in a way of talking about it. And thirdly, I would just say his insistence and his clarity about the centrality of Jesus Christ for the Catholic community itself. There's a clear understanding, and it's right in Evangelii Gaudium, it's that whole, the encounter with Jesus Christ. I think he sees as a way forward for Catholics themselves. Let's recenter on Christ. Let's recenter on the call to holiness. And from that, at least as Catholics, because we're affected by what is going on in the civil dialogue, that for us is going to be the place where we start. And so it's all tied together. And I think that call to holiness, his own breadth of experience, these are going to help us do our best to contribute to what is a pretty, let's be honest, feeling like an intractable problem right now, and probably, at least for this election season, going to be pretty tough.
Jonathan Reyes, much appreciated, as always. Look forward to your insights as this election unfolds in 2020.
Thank you for having me, Matthew.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.